going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Situation Room.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Situation Room. I'm here with my co-host, Gabe Ferguson. You guys can find us on Twitter. He's at Gabe Fergie. I'm at BSL Jordan Co. And we're here to try and break down the Colts game and what we saw today. And so, you know, we'll be running this podcast the same way we usually do. Check me out on Twitter. We're trying to get these up on Sunday night. You'll be able to see links to the videos. You know, it's before the All 22 comes out, but you'll be able to see the plays that we're talking about and what Gabe and I are looking at, and how we broke those down. But I think that we start these conversations with, you know, what do we take away from the Ravens team so far? And my takeaway all the way up to this week has been that they're not consistent enough on offense. They're very good on defense, and that they need to get it together and be more intentional on offense. And you could copy and paste what I've said probably the last 5 weeks at the top of and at the end of every game, and I'd feel the same way. How about you, Gabe?
Yeah, I agree. I think that there were some positives to take away from this game, similar as I thought there were positives to take away from last week's game. Largely the fact that they were able to bounce back, not only after having, you know, a demoralizing defeat last year, but coming out pretty flat in the first half, figuring some things out at halftime, and then putting together a really good second half of the game. You know, they held the Colts scoreless in the second half, which is impressive. The defense honestly held them in the game in the first half. They were really good throughout, I think. And that's definitely one of the things that we can hold on to. This Ravens team has gotten back to, you know, their roots. They're a defensive team. That's where they've put a lot of their cap into, a lot of their resources. And I think that's, you know, showing in terms of how the team is balanced at this point. And the offense is, it is what it is. You know, Lamar Jackson is a unique talent. He's a special player, I think, but there isn't enough infrastructure around him right now for him to really play at the elite level that we saw last year. And whether or not that's going to be what holds them back, I'm not sure. I think they still have the capability of playing at that high level, but they're not getting there consistently. And that's basically what you've been saying. And I think that is something that we saw throughout this game.
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth on this because I think that the Ravens offensive line definitely has a few holes in it, and they're not, the wide receivers are not elite, but this team does not strike me as one that does not have enough talent to be very good. You know, the gap between the talent levels of, say, Kansas City and this Baltimore team is not that huge, right? And yet the results of what we're seeing from a consistency basis, in my opinion, on offense for the entirety of a game, kind of collectively, is vastly different in terms of what we see on the field. And I'd like to see the Ravens really figure out a way to try and bring whatever level of off, whatever they need to do in the offense to bring that level up. They need to do a good job of recognizing the things that are holding them back and find ways to bring some wrinkles in. And I think we're going to talk about how they started to do that in this game. So hopefully we continue to see more of that. And we've talked about this a lot. The big issue that I think the Ravens have is that they just have these huge negative plays that happen from time to time that are just silly, you know? And to me, a couple of them, like the busted Matt Skura snap where it fell to the ground, the Hollywood Brown out, that's the ball that we've been asking Lamar to throw all year. Throw it lighter, throw it softer, let these guys, you know, have a legitimate chance to catch that ball pretty easily. That was one of those. And then the Lamar sack that he took on that like second and long to begin with, where like he just wasn't decisive enough in terms of trying to get around that guy at the end. And he either needed to decide to throw the ball sooner or decide to get out of the pocket sooner. But again, you know, you just see these hugely negative plays in moments where they don't need them. And I would call them predominantly self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think that it gets back to the talent question. And I think specifically what I'm referring to is the offensive line. I think there are issues in terms of the level of talent there, especially now that, you know, Stanley's out for the season. Mascara has not really played well this year. I think he's had a few games where he's looked, you know, fairly good, but there's been a lot of games where he's been average to below average. And this game in particular, you mentioned there were issues with the snaps that was repeated throughout this game. And even if it wasn't that one kind of like dribbler that he had, he was also kind of off the mark on several of his shotgun snaps. And that really makes the quarterback have to adjust. You're taking your mind off of looking downfield and figuring out where you're going with the ball and having to adjust to the snap. So that like even half second is going to mess you up in that play.
I totally agree with you. So why do the Ravens have to run 7+ snaps of 5 wide receivers a game? Like it's very clear where the weakest part of the Ravens team is, which is the interior of their offensive line right now. And yet the Ravens, I mean, I guess these bunched tight formations, which drive me crazy, are part of that solution. But the alternate to that cannot be going 5 wide and cannot be kind of letting your offensive line all be guys on islands at times too. You got to move the pocket more. You've got to do more to help the weakest part of your team. You've got to run misdirection off of that. You've got to, you know. So I think in some cases, and we'll talk about some of the things that I just mentioned today on today's podcast, they are doing some of those things. I would love to see the Ravens be deceptive in every single snap and everything single play that they do. And so, you know, let's jump into some of these plays. And I think one of the first ones that we saw, you know, you see this dive play, you know, last week against the Steelers, where Gus Edwards had a huge run because you had Brown kind of trailing to the outside. You had Lamar kind of faking out to that side. It opened up the linebackers and it gave Edwards kind of a big lane to run through there. And it's not clear, it was Williams keying Lamar, was he keying Brown? Either way, they were kind of cheating to the weak side. And so early in this Colts game, you know, we see from the Ravens in the first quarter at about the 457, 450 mark, they run a similar formation where you've got the receiver kind of coming across in motion. He does that kind of deep thing where he is behind the action of the play. And then Lamar does his kind of flipperoo thing. And instead, and I thought this was a nice little wrinkle, you see the Ravens run a screen to Dobbins. And I'll let you kind of talk a little bit about the screen, because I know that's something that you've been advocating for the whole season.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Ravens historically do not run very many screens, and they're pretty poor at running screens. I think this season we've seen a little bit more, but they haven't been very effective. I think there've been a couple that, you know, there've been a couple bubble screens that were blocked up well. But this is a screen to Dobbins. Like you said, I think Duvernay coming in that and the kind of like orbit motion to take at least one defender and kind of like hold him out of the play. And then you have the offensive line, set up some blocks. But and this play is effective. It goes for, I think, like a 7-yard gain on a 2nd and 9. So I think in general, this is a positive play. But I do want to highlight the fact that I just think that the Ravens offensive line is really unathletic and really poor in space. Like they are not guys who can really in the open field take out some blockers, especially when you lose Ryan Stanley, who's probably, you know, the most athletic guy on the line. They're a relatively unathletic offensive line. And I think it shows on plays like this. They just weren't able to kind of, you know, find their defender that they're supposed to block up and really take them out of the play. You know, part of that is the Colts defense, because they are very fast and very athletic defense. And they were able to kind of get around and get off some of those blocks, but this could have been a bigger play. But I just see guys like who are looking for guys to block and who don't have the ability to kind of like get downfield and set up those nice blocks that would spring this for a bigger play. And while I like the design here, I'm not sure the Ravens have the personnel to really be effective in this kind of game.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the personnel. You know, Bozeman has a nice block here in space, and actually Orlando Brown has had some fantastic blocks in space this year. I think one of them is on this play. He gets his, you know, he looks like he's late breaking on the whole thing, but he ends up being the lead blocker for Dobbins and kind of being the reason he gets the last 3 yards at the end. But you know what I don't like? The Ravens don't release these guys and let them get upfield and get by them. So part of it is not just the athleticism of the screen, but when teams screen really well, it is that your offensive lineman is 2+ yards ahead of the defender who is facing the wrong direction. When you look at the kind of, I guess let's call it the like 4 second mark where Lamar is releasing the ball to Dobbins, the defenders are not past the offensive linemen on this play, and the offensive linemen have not tried to release and get up the field at all, right? And so you have a huge asset here in the sense that, like, these guys, for one, should be already to the line of scrimmage here if you want to have a good crack at this, right? Two, at that point, you've let the defenders run by you, so you're giving Dobbins more space. Three, if they do that and there's screen recognition by the defensive lineman, that means that they're going to stop and not pursue Lamar. And maybe if we need to be bailed out on this play, that gives Lamar the space to do that. But instead, basically all the defenders are between the 26 and the 22 with all the Ravens offensive linemen and Dobbins. I was pretty impressed that he got 7 or 8 yards, whatever he got out of this game in the first place, because I think from a screen technique standpoint, it wasn't great. But it also goes to show you that you don't have to be great on screen technique to also make nice gains.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that point you're making. I think we can think back to playing the Washington football team. Was that like week 4, I think? And the way that their offensive line kind of in unison would like let the defender run by them and then have like a screen of like 4 guys who are out there in front of the running back and have no defenders behind them ready to tackle. And it was really just the guys out in front. And that's kind of the way you're supposed to run screens. You know, you're supposed to allow and invite the pressure and then have the quarterback who's able to, you know, kind of let those guys get near him and then toss over top of it to a running back who has defenders out in front or the blockers out in front. And maybe that's a design thing, or maybe they're not being, you know, taught technique very well on how to run these screens. But for whatever reason, it's just never been, or it hasn't been something that the Ravens are doing well. And I do like the fact that you're putting it in there, because I think it can be useful, like I said, but I think they still have some work to do on this.
Yeah, for sure. But it definitely slows the pass rush down, and it definitely gives them an asset. And if you've got guys blowing blocks on the interior offensive line regularly where they're getting beat, then, you know, they're not going to necessarily be fooled by a screen anyway, because they think they're going to beat their guys one-on-one to begin with. So, you know, let's talk about what we saw from the Colts in the first quarter, though. And I think that, you know, immediately their game plan, or at least their pre-scripting, told us something in particular about what they were going to try and do. So what did you see?
Yeah, so they wanted to attack the edges of the Ravens defense. And by that, they were attacking the outside linebackers in one sense, and also are attacking specifically Marcus Peters' side of the field. And I think part of this was, you know, they knew that the Ravens were without Marlon Humphrey, who is basically, in a lot of senses, an edge player because of the way he plays against the run. He's someone who you will come in and fill that lane and really, you know, be a force in run defense. And Marcus Peters is not that player. He's somebody who's basically going to try and, like, you know, play patty cakes with the wide receiver on the outside and maybe try and make an ankle tackle. And they went at him very early and often in this first quarter. And, you know, he made one nice tackle, and then they kind of ran at him and they let up a big gain. And then there was the third play in which he was able to swipe out the ball at the end. And obviously that was a really key play in this game, because at that point, the Ravens really looked lackluster. Like, they didn't have much energy. The Colts were marching down the field. They were pretty much running the ball at will. And then, you know, Peters was able to force that fumble, and Clark picked it up and returned it for the touchdown. And that's kind of what turned the momentum of the game. It's really what kept the Ravens in it in the first half. And, as you know, as much as I'm going to complain about Peters and his run defense, that's the kind of play that he's made this season. And he's been a difference maker in his ability to not only force fumbles, he also had an interception in this game. We might talk a little bit about that as well. But he has just been a playmaker, and that's something that you need. And he has his warts. You know, he's had some issues in coverage, but the fact that he's able to force turnovers, that's what's made the Ravens defense, you know, as good as it has been this year.
Yeah. And I think you're selling Marcus Peters maybe a little short here. You know, if you look at these three plays, the first one, which happens kind of at the 14-20 mark, it's just like a wide swing, like pass to the flat, where it looks like Peters is probably assigned maybe a third of the field on this play. And Peters comes up and makes contact with the running back kind of at the line of scrimmage, and he doesn't shy away from it. And he definitely creates the opportunity for guys to come in behind him and make a play. And, you know, for everything that we heard about Marcus Peters before he got to Baltimore, at least if I would have believed what the media told me, this would have been a play that he wouldn't have been as physical or tried to accomplish kind of in the context of, you know, what happened to him. So, you know, the next play, Peters does the same thing. It's a little screen out, you know, but Peters gets off a block and is the second tackler, basically, or second guy to the ball. And he's the reason that the Ravens are able to, again, swarm up and make the tackle. So he's not, you know, Humphrey in those instances is often capable of bringing him down on his own. But he is, you know, he's trying to get in there. He's trying to strip the ball loose. He's been effective as a defender. He bites on the first move. You know, we definitely know that. And that's something that we as Ravens fans have to live with. But as long as you can live with those things, I've been pretty happy overall with what we're seeing from Marcus Peters.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, there's some negatives in his game, and maybe I am selling him a little bit short. He does kind of have at least, you know, some effort on these plays. And he just has a knack. You know, he has a knack to make the play when you need to. And that's something that we've seen from Marlon Humphrey a lot. And when you have both those guys who are able to kind of be those playmakers and force turnovers, it really makes the Ravens defense, you know, something that it's really hard to play against. And fortunately, you know, the Ravens have those two defenders, and they also have a lot of other good players on the defense as well. So I think that the Ravens and Ravens fans are fortunate to have, you know, a defense that is looking like to be one of the best in the NFL this year.
Yeah, so the Colts really, you know, part of their game plan was to get to the edges. It was to use the screens. I think teams have seen what the Washington football team did, even, you know, in short instances of what the Steelers were doing in terms of quick passes. You know, they wanted to get the ball out quickly because they know that the Ravens are going to get after the quarterback. And so, you know, we saw a lot of those. But, you know, I thought I saw Haloti Ngata running down the field on this play. You know, the next one that we're going to share with you guys is a little screen pass that you see, you know, from the Colts about the 10:07 mark in the second quarter. And I thought the Ravens actually their edge guys did a pretty good job of defending the screen. I think they are starting to realize that teams are going to try to do that to them. And it's going to be a component of what they need to kind of be more aware of, or they're starting to just get better at recognition of it. But in this instance, Judon's not able to kind of break back to be able to make a play on the ball. But out of nowhere, you see a streaking 92 come down the field and make the tackle in the open field.
Yeah. Holy cow. Justin Madubuike. This is a play that, you know, doesn't show up as a big play in the stat sheet or in the box score, but this was a pretty well-designed screen as well. And if Madubuike doesn't make that play, there's a good chance that might go for like a 50-yard play or even a touchdown, because the Ravens, I think, have two guys being blocked up right in front of it, and they're big blockers on small players, and that's generally not going to go well for the defender. And Matabike makes a huge play. He shows some incredible athleticism, that quick burst to get down and really cover some ground to just take out the running back at the ankles. And it ended up also being a play that basically made the Colts punt after I think they were able to get pressure and force Rivers into a incompletion on the next pass as well. This is a huge play. This is one of the plays that really kept the Ravens in this game, because that could have easily been a long drive for the Colts. Playmakers need to make plays. And this is an example of a Ravens defensive playmaker making a huge play. You know, Matabike is a rookie. He hasn't had a lot of snaps so far this year. But I think he's really acquitted himself well. He's a guy who was asked to do a little bit more than I think expected in this game, because Calais Campbell was knocked out early with a calf injury. I haven't seen an update on his injury. Hopefully, he's going to be okay. But I think even without Campbell, the defense really played really well. And Matabike is a big part of that.
Yeah, we saw two other things that I saw on this play. I think you're absolutely right. If he doesn't make this tackle, then that's going to be a touchdown. But a couple other things that I saw on this play that it reminded me of was, one, I thought Malik Harrison had a really good game. The Ravens decided to give him a bigger role in this game. I thought he responded really well and wasn't kind of – he has been abused a few times when he's been on the field up to this point. Maybe the Colts just didn't expect it, so they didn't have it in the playbook to attack him in the same way, or maybe he got it cleaned up. But I thought he played well. Also, Justin Ellis is in on this play, and I thought he had a tremendous game this week. He was part of the third down that led to the fourth down stuff, and he was playing on the fourth down, but he was the reason they stuffed that third and short to make it fourth and short. Basically, that sealed the game in total. He had a pass knockdown at the line of scrimmage, kind of inside the 10-yard line when the Ravens had the Colts pinned earlier in the game. I just thought both of those guys from a role player perspective had really nice games this week. And both their faces popped up on this play. But yeah, Matabike showing athleticism here. I'm okay if he turns into even a lesser version of Nada, but we get an athletic guy that could be making plays all over the field, as opposed to, I'd love to have a guy that gets interior pass rush, but just to see this kind of athleticism and this kind of play was a really welcome sight.
Yeah. Justin Matabike was a guy I was really excited for when the Ravens drafted him. He kind of has that quick twitch interior pass rush ability. At least he showed that in college. He hasn't been quite as effective as a rusher as what I would hope early on. But, he's pretty early in his career. He's only had, four games under his belt now. I think that as he gets more comfortable in the role, I think we'll begin to see him, start to mature and start to really become, a guy who's going to be a consistent part of the Ravens defensive line rotation. And that's really going to be something that's going to probably be important for the Ravens, especially if they keep having some of these nicks and injuries down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I totally forgot that Calais Campbell got hurt and came out of this game. And you really didn't see the Ravens miss. I mean, they missed him, right? They would have been better with him, just like the same as I could say it didn't seem like the Ravens missed Marlon Humphrey in this game either, but they would have also been better with him, right? So it's interesting. The next play that we've got queued up here happens at the 9:21 mark, but do you want to walk us through it?
Yeah, so it's actually the very next play. So that the screen pass that was able to be stopped by Matabike gave the Colts a 3rd and 5, and the Ravens, it wasn't anything fancy that they did on the next play, but it was a third down stop. And I wanted to highlight this play in particular because they were able to get pressure with four men. And Yannick Ngakoue was one of those four guys. He was able to get right into Rivers' face, force him to throw an off-target pass and get the Colts off the field on third down. And that's something that the Ravens did exceptionally well in this game. I think they held the Colts to just 2 for 12 on third down conversions, which is really good. That's a great percentage that any defense would love to have in any game. And especially for a team like the Colts, who, they actually have a pretty good, short, quick passing game, to be able to get them off the field so many times was really impressive. And I mentioned this before, the Ravens defense really kept the team in the game, especially when the offense was sputtering in the first half. And, plays like this, where you were able to get quick pressure before, is a big reason why that was possible.
Yeah, and the combination of these guys were interesting on this play. You know, you had Judon and Ngakoue in kind of their traditional roles. You actually had Judon kind of in that wide nine look, which I kind of expected Ngakoue to be showcasing more of in this game, but they were paired with McPhee and with Wolf as down linemen. And so again, you know, when I mentioned that it felt like the Ravens didn't miss Calais Campbell, I think this play is an example of that, right? Where they were still able to generate four-man rushes and still do some things. I think that you saw Wink get away from some of the exotic blitz packages and really just stick to kind of five-man and like more traditional. I mean, as traditional for Wink, right? Like not your typical kind of Ravens of the 2000 era or year where you had four guys straight rushing and Bulware either coming off the edge or not, right? But you did have much more simplified five-man rush looks. We'll have to see what Ken and Phillip Studdy's numbers come out on that, but I think that they got a little simpler on that. And the Ravens got burned early on a play. There was essentially a wide receiver screen play where the Ravens kind of overloaded to the right, and Ngakoue was, they had two guys standing up. I think it might have been Judon and McPhee. And Ngakoue had his hand in the ground on the left, and that it was supposed to create the deception. And Ngakoue dropped, but it was a screen pass to the wide receiver. And the Ravens just, they were so unbalanced, and it was so obvious to Rivers. It was an easy, whether it was a pre-play call or a check, I think that kept the Ravens. They just decided they weren't going to do that this game. You can do that when you can rush with four guys like this. When McPhee, Wolf, Judon, and Ngakoue can get home, and you've got guys like Bowser and Ferguson and Matabike that you can rotate in with them, that makes this team even more dangerous as the year progresses.
Yeah, and I think that really goes to show you the value of being able to bring in someone like Ngakoue in the middle of the season to really bolster the Ravens' pass rush. And, you know, the sacks haven't really been there yet. I think they only had like two sacks last week against Ben Roethlisberger, and they didn't get any sacks in this game, but the pressure was there. And that's really, you know, the stat that you want your front four to be able to get is those pressures, and to be able to force the quarterback into inaccurate throws and maybe make a few mistakes as well. And like you said, there's a lot of versatility with the players that the Ravens have up front. They have a deep defensive, you know, line, outside linebacker group. They can rotate players in and out. And I think that's really, along with, you know, the secondary that we talked about with playmakers like Humphrey and Peters, I think that's going to be what keeps this Ravens team, you know, among the NFL's elite.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the Ravens' response on the next drive was the one that you want to talk about next. And Lamar got a little laser focused in or Roman or a combination of them. Why don't you walk us through what you saw?
Yeah, so this was basically the Mark Andrews drive, you might say. So there's three straight plays in this following drive when the Ravens got the football back where Lamar focuses on Andrews. And honestly, at least two of these plays are designed specifically for him. The first one is, it's basically an RPO, and it's a nice play design, I think. And Andrews is the target that Lamar tries to force the ball into, but he's pretty well covered. And I think what could have happened here instead is if Lamar pumps there and he has Boyle wide open on the outside, and if he just kind of makes that small adjustment instead of trying to force it to Andrews, Boyle was a huge gain for him. And then the next play is this, I think it's tight end screen that's trying to be set up. And this one was just blown up from the start. Andrews is starting to block the defender, and then he kind of like lets the defender go by, and, you know, he's sitting up right in front of the offensive line to kind of pick up, to catch the pass and hopefully make a play. It looks similar to what kind of play that the Chiefs will do with Travis Kelce at times, but it just wasn't well executed. And the Colts kind of, I don't know if they felt it coming or were able to sniff it out, but it was basically another kind of like sketchy pass that Lamar probably should not have made. And then this put this at the Ravens in third and long. And now you have a play where it's actually a really nice route by Andrews. And he just sits down in the middle of zone coverage, and Lamar just finds him. It's a beautiful pass, hits him for like 13-yard gain, and it's an easy first down. And that's where Andrews, I think, is at his best. When you're not trying to force it to him with like these weird play designs, and, you know, sometimes the creativity is useful, but he's has the ability to find like the creases in the zone, and if Lamar can just like not try and force it to him every single time and just let the plays come to him when they're there, that's when I think that connection is at its best.
Yeah, I it's impossible to know because we don't know the play calls, right? And we don't know what the intention here is. I think the thing that drives me the craziest about all these plays, one is the tight end screen to Mark Andrews. This doesn't seem like a good use of Mark Andrews to me, especially when your offensive line is already kind of getting beat up across the board. But you're absolutely right about the pump fake to Boyle on the other play. And if you're looking at the play where he throws it to Andrews, and this is my biggest gripe with Lamar, Andrews is the most covered guy on the field when he makes this throw. Like, Andrews does run a nice route. Lamar does make a nice throw. All three of the Colts defenders in the middle of the field are dead locked in on Mark Andrews along with Lamar. And so, yeah, that works. Yeah, that's great. But underneath, Snead is wide open, right? So, but alternately, if you see Dobbins, I believe it's Dobbins leaking out of the backfield, and he is wide open on the left side of this field. And a pump to Lamar would have pulled that defender there as well and given Dobbins an easy shot at that first down, if not more. But instead, he has to make a very accurate, very tight throw into that window and throw it between three guys. And so, again, this is what we don't know, and we don't know what's happening in the coach's room. But to me, it's like, if I am coaching Lamar, what I'm saying is, Lamar, go find the guy that's defended by three guys and then move to your next read. When there is a guy that has three guys converging on him, go find the next guy. Like that is time to move on. If that is your only read and your only target, that's the time to break the pocket, right? But in this instance, somebody else has to be open in this case, right? Like you have to be able to recognize then where the defenders were on the field and what has been happening. And the Ravens need to start playing more chess and less checkers in situations like this, right? What makes really good quarterbacks elite is not their ability. It is their ability to throw the ball, but it's their ability to see the field when they get to the line of scrimmage, to count hats, to know which directions guys are going in, and to know that in this instance, if the guy at basically between the hash and the 40-yard marker is going to suck to Mark Andrews, that J.K. Dobbins is going to be wide open on the other side because the guy on the left is going to be running a go route, which is the design, right? To me, in this instance, you've got basically three receivers and two defenders to the left if you include Dobbins. Or if you're just looking at Andrews and Steen, you've got three defenders and two receivers. It's like, which one of the, like, it's the triangle offense and the same thing that Phil Jackson was always trying to do. And so, you know, to me, Lamar needs to start to be able to read the field a little bit better and try and isolate those reads. That being said, you're absolutely right. This is a great route by Andrews. But you're also burning your shot at throwing the ball to Andrews when you do it three times in a row too. I mean, I think they were just lucky to convert this, and I'd love to see. I said this earlier in the podcast, and I'll use more examples as we kind of go through some other film spots here. But this is an example where I want the Ravens to make it seem like they're doing the thing that they normally do and know their own personal tendency and do something different. Make it look like we're going to try and throw it to Andrews and throw it somewhere else intentionally. Run the fake screen to Andrews and let Dobbins leak out to the left. Or the Colts did this several times this game. Basically, they run two sets of screens, both left and right at the same time, and the quarterback has to pick the better option, right? So I just think there's an opportunity for the Ravens to be smarter on balance than they have been in some of these passing mechanics. And maybe that is just Lamar not doing it and they're coached in, or maybe it's Greg Roman and the concepts aren't there and being coached up.
So for these plays in particular, I don't mind that they're done throw to Andrews. I think that was, you know, a throw that's on time. It's within, you know, the normal route that's being run. It's a tight throw, but it's an open throw. And I think that was well designed. What I don't like are the previous two, the first one and the second one, they're both forced. Either one of them could have gone worse than what happened. And I think on both of them, we also saw Ravens players who were wide open. And those are things that I think Jackson needs to be able to recognize. Maybe use like his eyes, use the pump fake, like we mentioned, to try and get a player more open. And then, you know, maybe just come off your read. I know that you're trying to get Andrews involved in the offense. He hasn't been as involved in the offense, and especially in the past few weeks, as I think any of us would be expecting. And, you know, they're probably trying to, like, you know, get him the ball because he is a good playmaker, but you can't just do it for the sake of doing it when it's not there. And that is the thing that we need to see from Jackson, to be able to come off of that, you know, prescribed or designed read and see what else is available to him, because there always is going to be another option. That's how, you know, offense works. It's not always just going to be the one read and that's it. So I think that we've seen some nice things from Andrews and Jackson this year. There's a lot of plays, especially earlier in the year, where I felt like they were able to kind of make some magic happen outside of the normal, you know, framework of the play. They kind of were able to, like, Lamar was able to break the pocket and scramble around a little bit and find Andrews as kind of like a safety valve. And Andrews was doing a great job of working open. And that hasn't been so much a part of the offense in recent weeks. And maybe that's part of the reason that, you know, the offense hasn't been clicking at such a high level, because there's just been so much pressure on Jackson, and he hasn't been able to, like, really be the kind of player that where he's at his best, where he's, you know, he's extending plays and finding players downfield that are open. We saw a little bit of that against Pittsburgh last week, and maybe even a little bit of that today. But I think for the most part, you know, there just seems to be a kind of like a design in the offense. And I think he's trying to just do too much at times. And I don't know if there's any, like, you know, cure all for this, especially with what we're talking about with the Ravens offensive line being suspect at times. But I do think that what I want to see is more getting through progressions quickly and having, you know, more simplified throws. And, you know, we are going to get to this a little bit, and that's kind of what happened in the second half to a certain extent. But before we get there, there was a play on defense that I wanted to talk about really quickly. And this was a second down play. And I wanted to highlight this because I thought it was a really weird personnel grouping and a really weird decision on how the Ravens set up their defensive responsibility. So this was a play you might remember where Matt Judon was covering the host tight end Mo Alie-Cox about 20 yards downfield. And it was a play that was completed for a big game and set up the Colts field goal at the end of the first half. And for some reason, the Ravens, it looks like they were in their, I don't know if it was base personnel or something, or some variation of base. But they had three defensive tackles on the field, and they had two outside linebackers. And Judon, for whatever reason, was tasked with man coverage on Miller Cox. First of all, I don't know why you have three defensive tackles and two outside linebackers and in that kind of down distance, second and 10. Like, that doesn't really make sense. I mean, I know that the Colts like to run out 12 personnel, but I feel like you still want to be a nickel in this situation where the Colts are kind of driving the ball. I don't think they're going to run there. Like, I'm not sure. Maybe they were caught in the wrong personnel grouping. I'm not sure. But I don't think that that's a position that you want Judon in. And maybe, you know, it's just like a bad situation. They were caught in the wrong personnel and he was in a responsibility that he shouldn't be in. But that's not where you want your players to be. I think you want Judon rushing the passer or dropping off into like a short zone coverage. And I'm not sure what Martin Dale was thinking on this one.
Yeah, you know, this is one of my personal pet peeves of the Ravens defense. It's like deception is great, you know, all the way up until the minute that it's blatantly obvious when the play starts or that you're not actually generating pressure. And the Ravens defense is good enough that it doesn't always have to be deceptive to be good. And they should just be okay with that. You know, when the Colts are going to go five wide, run your base package, let your pass rushers pass rush, let your defensive backs be who they are. And often you're going to be successful in that. And change it up. Don't always play man. Don't always play zone. Don't always play cover two. Don't always play cover three. But there's enough things that you can do variation-wise in that and layer in some small things for deceptions from time to time that you don't need to be leaving your guys in situations like this. This play it was PTSD for me personally, going back to the Chiefs game when we just saw Judon regularly defending receivers 20 yards down the field and Patrick Mahomes was just picking this team apart. I'm fine with it if there's six or seven men rushing on the other side of it. And then Judon, then it's a surprise. And Judon is just kind of like there just in case, because if no one's there, maybe it's an easy throw, but otherwise someone has to be there. But in this instance, where you only rush four guys and Judon is matched up on a tight end who is essentially going to run a vertical route, then, you know, I just don't understand the point of why the Ravens try and do this sometimes. So hopefully they were just caught out of it. And like you said, they were caught off balance. But, you know, I think, you know, it's a lesson to they need to see these kind of things, because these are some of the big plays that they've gotten hit on all year long.
Yeah. And I think, you know, every once in a while, like we said, you know, you're going to be caught in the wrong personnel against it's the wrong play, and you're going to have somebody in a mismatch. And that's something that the offense can dictate at times, and you can't always get out of that. But maybe if you know that personnel, maybe you just, like, you know, you do a zone instead of having like a man coverage here. And I don't know. I mean, it ended up being 3 points, and it's not the end of the world. But I just wanted to highlight it because it seemed like it was something that was a little uncommon for what the Ravens try to do. I feel like they're pretty good about, you know, having the right personnel and having the right, you know, play called for the personnel that they have on the field. So this one stood out to me as something that you don't really see that often. But, you know, in the end, it wasn't the worst thing. They gave up 3 points, and then the Colts didn't score anymore in the entire game. So can't complain too much.
Yeah, so that was pretty much wrapped up the first half, which I think we were all as fans pretty frustrated with. But the Ravens came out in the second half, and they were a totally different team. And I think we want to start the conversation here because the Ravens did something in the second half that I think that we as Ravens fans and anybody that's been trying to dive into the film and the analytics, you know, we're really looking at. And, you know, they certainly caught the broadcast and the announcers off guard, because I think on every, like, there must have been 6 or 7 plays of the second half where the announcers were talking about something else and the graphic wasn't on the Ravens, and the Ravens got to the line and snapped the ball and ran decisive plays that were successful. So apologies on some of these clips because they were short, because they were cutting to them basically as the Ravens were snapping or afterwards. And that's what you see. But we finally got the Ravens to do a little bit of what we'd like to see. One is, I think we saw more 11 personnel. I think that's helpful for them to be able to spread the field out. And two, it was kind of 3-4 steps, 2.5-ish seconds, bang, bang decisions from Lamar, quick, easy reads. And so hopefully, you know, again, we're not in the locker room, so we don't know how these are being coached up. You know, it's certainly possible that these were lucky first reads every single time. But the idea is that you set up the play. Lamar looks it over. He decides where he wants to go first based on what the defense is going to give him. He's going to take those opportunities and the things that are in front of him. And so, you know, I loved on the first one of these plays, they put Marquise Brown in the slot. They hit him on a quick post. The Ravens need to be running Marquise Brown, or I'm sorry, that's the second one of these plays. The first one is Snead kind of coming on a crosser after some play action and some deception where we saw kind of that orbit motion from the Ravens. The second one is Marquise Brown running a skinny post out of the slot. I want to see that all the time. If you remember it from last year, that was a touchdown in week 1 against Miami, and then it seemed to disappear from the Ravens playbook after that. And Brown took a hit and he took the contact and got up and played fine after that. So I thought that, you know, that one was really smart. Then you get a high-low action between kind of Snead and Boyle and Marquise Brown, where you get them at all three levels. And the Colts defenders, really all three guys were borderline open on this play. And if Lamar decides that he doesn't want to make one of these throws, you know, he's going to have an opportunity to run it here. They just caught them out of sorts, and they used the verticality of the offense's potential to be able to create those. And then the last one is kind of, again, 11 personnel. You got Boykin wide, and the receiver just doesn't want to let him beat him deep. And Lamar just takes a quick, easy throw underneath to Boykin, and he runs it across the first down marker. The Ravens can do this whenever they want, because teams are loading up the boxes and they're keeping everything tight. The Ravens should be in like 11 personnel where they run out three wide receivers. It's going to put a lot more stress on opposing defenses, and it's going to make them be a lot lighter in terms of what their personnel looks like when they're defending them.
Yeah. So obviously this was extremely refreshing to see. And it was very, I think, hopeful on what we could see moving forward. And I think the past 2 weeks we've seen things like this where you say, okay, you know, the Ravens just put together, you know, 2 really great back-to-back drives. Why can't they do that consistently? And you know, we've talked about that at the beginning of the podcast. We're saying, you know, it's issues with the offensive line. But those issues with the offensive line disappeared in the second half when the Ravens went up-tempo, when they spread the teams out, where they put the ball in Lamar's hands and let him be a quarterback. And he was extremely decisive and he was extremely accurate, and they moved the ball down the field and the Colts couldn't do anything about it. I don't understand why you can't do that more frequently.
And why they stopped afterwards. I mean, and to me, you know, I'm tired of hearing this, like, we've got to hide the playbook. We've got to hide the playbook. Like, that murmur to me is over. Like, put it all on film and build off of it, continue to build on it and get deceptive on the things that are successful when you put them on film now, right? But the Ravens, after this drive and after moving all over the field in the third quarter, basically decided they were going to go back to what they did in the first quarter and just kind of ran the ball to futility. Now, granted, I don't think the game was close at that point, you know, especially after the Tucker field goal. So like the very last drive I'm okay with, but last season, the Ravens iced the clock in these games. Like the last two drives the Colts had in this game would have been the Ravens last year scoring a touchdown and just absolutely obliterating not only the score, but the Colts' heart. And that killer instinct wasn't there for the Ravens in this game. The third down where right after the touchdown, I didn't understand that play call. It just seemed, I don't understand what Greg Roman is trying to accomplish sometimes right now. But what we saw from those passing plays is exactly what the Ravens need.
Yeah. And it also gets to the point about what are you doing on first down? And this is something that we messaged back and forth a little bit about during the Ravens bye week. And if you look at the Ravens splits on first down, they run the ball like 65% of the time on first down. It was kind of an absurd number. And that, when you are picking up 4, 5, 6 yards when you run the ball, that's okay. When you're picking up 1 or -1 or 2 or maybe 0, which the Ravens have been doing an awful lot of this year because their offensive line and their run game hasn't been as good as it has been in the past, then you're behind the eight ball. And what that means is then you're putting the offense in bad position on second and third down. And you're really putting a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson. Let him pass the ball on first down. Use play action. Use, you know, some deception. Get him like out of the pocket, bootleg. Get him easy throws. Throws where he's moving forward, where receivers are moving forward. That's something that we didn't see, honestly, for much of the entire season until the second half of this football game. And we saw that the Ravens actually have guys who can get open and make plays on these short posts and on these skinny posts and on these slant routes. And we talked about with Boykin on that, when he has that 8-yard cushion on the outside, you can just throw him that ball. We saw Hollywood Brown open on these quick outs, I think twice in the first half. And he picked up a third down, and he would have had another one if he didn't drop the ball. So these are plays that the Ravens can be using on a regular basis, but for whatever reason, they're trying not to. And I know that the Ravens are fundamentally still a run-first team, but you can be a run-first team. That doesn't mean you have to run the ball every first down. You can run the ball on second down when you're in second and short, which they love to do. I'm not going to get into that right now, but I think that the Ravens are at their best when they're keeping teams off balance. And that's why we saw them have this effectiveness in the beginning of the first half or the second half, because that's not what the Colts were expecting. They're expecting the Ravens to come out and do the same thing that they do all the time, and that's run the ball on first down. And when you hit them with a quick passing game and pick up the tempo a little bit, you're putting them on your heels, and then you can hit them with some of those runs. Then you can hit them on the edge with a Lamar Jackson keeper. And then you, all of a sudden, you're down at the 5-yard line, and you're about to score a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And once you start having success, you know, that's what lets the Ravens do what they did after this, right? And so, you know, I want to talk about the fourth down conversion, which was huge in this game. But what I love about this play, I mentioned this earlier. I wish the Ravens made it look like what they were doing wasn't what they were actually going to do on every single play. I wish every single one of those mesh points where Lamar pulls the ball back was a pass, right? Because everybody knows that one of the two guys is likely going to be running. On one of the few times that they ran a play action on that, it was really successful. I think it was in one of those quick passes. Maybe the first one to Snead was, I think, a fake RPO, like mesh point handoff and a pass to Snead, right? So what you see on this fourth down conversion is they go, the Ravens should just give up the all five wide, go with this look, go with 4 wide, keep the running back in the backfield. If they want to pass the ball, then, you know, it gives you options to run, which they have to defend, but it also gives you an extra pass blocker. it's highly successful. But what I love about this play is you immediately see both Fluker, I believe, and Skura pull after the snap, making the play go look appear like it's going to the left. But the Ravens actually run the play to the right. And so in this instance, they made it look like it was going to be a QB keeper from Lamar, basically in the same quarterback power action that we constantly see from this team. And the Colts basically bit on it. And so you see Dobbins be able to run to the right. All you need is the guy that's in the slot to be successful in his block, and you can pick up a first down, and they get it. I mean, super gutsy call on and three on a fourth down to run the ball. But what I love about this play is the fundamental misdirection of what you did here. You could also double pull power here and throw the ball. And I think that in a lot of instances, that's going to create a lot of tension for those two linebackers. Basically, the Colts did the exact same thing the Steelers did here and kept the two kind of inside linebackers in hook zones slash kind of quarterback spy reads, right? And as soon as they thought Lamar might keep it to break on Lamar, the Ravens can create a lot of tension there, especially if they show a run look to those guys as their key for recognition too.
Yeah, this fourth down play design, I absolutely love. And I think it's, you know, it's meant to put the defense in conflict. It's something we've talked about before. You're making it look like it's going to be like a quarterback power, but you hand the ball off on the option. I think this is kind of like an inverted veer, something I'm not entirely sure. I'm not that kind of X and O's guy. But, you know, Dobbins in the open field is explosive. And he can get to the edge. He had basically one man to beat, and he beat him. It was the defensive end who was kind of lost in the middle. He wasn't quite sure what to do. He was thinking about crashing in on Lamar. Instead, he gets caught in no man's land, and Dobbins gets by him. And then it's a pretty, I'm not going to say an easy first down, but because the blocking downfield was good enough, it essentially was an easy first down. And, you know, that's exactly what the Ravens needed at this point. And this was a huge play for them. They'd actually, I want to say, burned a timeout going into this. And I was a little critical about the timeout because I'm thinking, okay, this is a tight game. I'm not sure you want to be potentially wasting a precious timeout just to figure out the right play for fourth down. You probably should have that, you know, kind of ready to go at this point. But they came out of the timeout, they had the right personnel, they had the right formation, they had the right play call, and this, you know, drive ended up in a touchdown, and that timeout was well worth it in that estimation. So, you know, the Ravens have had some issues on fourth down this year, although I think most of them have been in kind of, they had one obvious one last week where it didn't work. But, you know, this game, they were able to get it when they needed it. And this was a really big play in the game, and it might be, you know, the play in the game, because if they get stuffed there and the Colts are only down four and it's close to midfield, they have a good chance of coming back and scoring, you know, a touchdown or at least a field goal and making this a lot closer than it would end up being.
Yeah. You know, I've been critical of kind of some of Lamar's decision-making this season, because I think it hasn't been, or it hasn't looked as good as it has, but I think this play is a really good example where you've got to be able to teach him to trust some of his other guys, that you can be the decoy. I wish the Ravens would design like a quarterback run play action play where they run some kind of play. Like, it looks like it's going to be a quarterback run from Lamar, and it turns into a pass. Like, they need to figure out a way to do that, because teams are way over committing to it. But plays like this will let him build success there. The option run that he blew in the first quarter that we did not put on film here was 100% on Lamar not pitching the ball to Dobbins. I mean, the angle was there. If the pitch was wide enough, Dobbins is easily going to be able to get to that corner, and Lamar gets indecisive and decides ultimately to keep the ball. At the end of the day, Lamar's got to learn to trust the guys around him to be successful. He's got to learn to trust them in quick passes. He's got to learn to trust them in timing. And I think that Ravens will grow a lot from that.
So real quick on that option, though, I think that play was kind of blown up from the get-go. If you might remember, and we didn't plan on talking about this play, but it was the first drive. It was like a third and three or something. And it looked like it was the same kind of, you know, option that the Ravens had run effectively against the Steelers last week. And this time, unfortunately, it didn't work. And at first glance, I thought it was, you know, they just weren't on the same page. there was some kind of miscommunication. Then at second glance, I noticed that Bradley Bozeman had been driven 4 yards back into Lamar's lap right off the snap. And I don't think he felt comfortable pitching the ball because he had a dude right in his face. And maybe he needs to make that pitch anyway. But
is it the whole point of the option that if a dude is in your face, you pitch the ball?
Not on that kind of option. I mean, well, yes, but when you, because you're supposed to have the ability to run with it. So he had so ideally you have the ball and you're trying to run off the edge, and then you have, you know, the running back who's available to you to pitch the ball to. That's kind of like your traditional like option play. In this instance, he was still like right in the backfield. He wasn't able to make his move to try and like, you know, gain the edge. And he was basically forced to either pitch the ball right there or try and do something. He chose not to pitch it, try to make something happen, and it didn't work. I think that at that place blocked better, it's a different outcome. But
oh, for sure. I mean, if he definitely had pressure in his face on it, and if the play was blocked really well, it would easily have been a first down, if not more. I think the Ravens need to run that option. We featured it last week for a reason. They put it in their pocket after that because it got blown up, and it's something that they need to do. It's effective. And if Lamar would have had space to kind of, yes, the quarterback's supposed to drive into the teeth of the defense a little bit to suck things to him, to give the running back even more space. But again, you know, and I guess my point here is not so much like, I mean, I still thought he should have pitched the ball on that play. He's got to learn to trust his teammates, and he's got to learn to trust that he's not the only guy that can carry this team to a win. I fundamentally believe that's the reason they lost to the Steelers last week. That on that fourth down play at the end of the game, he decided he was the only one who could get that first down, and he was not. There were plenty of other guys that were open and a lot of options that he had on that play. And he's just got to learn to trust the guys that he's playing with, or at least be not the primary kind of guy in that instance. So an option is a good example where if Lamar decides that he's just going to keep it, he's the guy that everybody's looking at. He's the guy everybody's going to commit to, right? So like, let's flip the script and go to this next play that we're going to post. And that's the touchdown from Lamar, right? So you're on a third and inches, right? The Ravens, we're getting death taxes and second and third and short, and Ravens running the ball every time. Like, if you want to go and make a bet on like plays and choices, like when it's second and short or third and short, the Ravens almost always run the ball. I don't know what the stats are, but Gabe and I joke about this all the time. But essentially the Ravens set it up. They bring in the power package. They bring in Ben Powers. They've got Ricard on the field. You know, this is usually kind of a quarterback sneak, like right up the gut for the Ravens, or it's a dive play. And the Ravens they absolutely sell the heck out of this dive play. And Lamar had no intention to do that, right? That misdirection kind of deception that was like layered into this play. Teams are trying to key on what the Ravens are doing and what they showcase them first, which is what's happening, I think, on first down this year. The Ravens are showcasing run, and teams are playing it like that kind of run, right? So this is a good example of the Ravens taking advantage of that. They made it look like a dive. It was an easy run in the end zone for Lamar.
Yeah. Colts completely sold out to take the dive away. They wanted to get this stuff, and Lamar Jackson had an easy touchdown, and largely because Mark Andrews had a phenomenal block on this play. He just completely took his guy and drove him out the back of the end zone. So great block by Andrews. Jackson shows off his speed. Great play call here. Not great job blocking by the offensive line. I think
not even close.
Got destroyed. He got blasted 5 yards off the line of scrimmage.
So did Patrick McCurry. I mean, they're like twins. Lang, if you pause this right at kind of the, like, what is this? The 3 second, 3.5 second mark. It's like twins laying on the ground. You see 65 and 68 on their butts.
Yeah, it's almost kind of comical if you watch this play on loop. You just have these two Ravens offensive linemen just going flying backwards. And it looks like it's maybe just one defensive tackle who takes them both out.
I think you're right. Now that I look at it again, I think you're right.
So impressive play by the Colts defensive line. Not great run blocking, but, you know, the deception is there. Lamar's agility and speed to easily gain a third down, easily gain a touchdown. Mark Andrews, like we said, had an incredible block. And Andrews also had that big block on the fourth down play too. So Andrews, you know, even if he hasn't been a focal point of the Ravens offense in terms of the passing statistics that we thought he might have this year, he's been an integral part in the Ravens running game. And I think that's somewhere that he should be given a lot of credit for, because that wasn't necessarily something that he has been fantastic at earlier on in his career. And it's really something that he's developing. So any last thoughts on this game real quick before we wrap it up?
Yeah. You know, the one other thing I'd add about this play is I'm curious, you know, when Lamar gets to the line, and this is, you know, I've been critical. I think he's made some poor decisions in game moments, but I'm curious if there's kind of a check when he gets to the line here, right? About kind of how he decides what he's going to do here. And I hope that it is. I mean, to me, this is the thing that the Ravens, at least in appearance, don't seem like they're doing, which is why it feels like they're often more predictable. But if you kind of count bodies and hats on the defensive line and who they had in the backfield, you see that the inside middle linebacker is cheating to the right. He is inside the hash mark. So you've only got the one linebacker, or I don't know if he's a safety, a linebacker safety or cornerback to the right. So the advantage is to the left of this play, right? So Lamar should be going like, ideally, if they're shifted left to kind of protect more for Lamar kind of taking it to the backside of the play, then they're at more of an advantage in that sense. So hopefully this is the kind of call and the way that the Ravens are getting to the line of scrimmage, figuring out what they want. They use the entire play clock here. So I think that they did go into it knowing that. I want to see more of that. I want to see more instances of that. And I think if we get that from the Ravens, you're going to see them continue to be better. And they just need to keep doing this kind of stuff and less of the dive plays on third and short and second and short that are blatantly obvious until teams stop overcommitting to it.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I definitely at some point would hope to see the Ravens learn that on second and short, you can pick up chunk yards because, you know, the defense is expecting you to run it because the Ravens always run it. And even if you don't do anything or pick up a big play, you can, you know, have third and short. So second and short is basically the most ideal play that you can have as an offense, other than like first and short, which is pretty hard to get. Second and short, you get another do-over if you don't make
it. How do you get first and short?
You can get some weird plays where you have like a hold called down the field.
True.
It happens sometimes. Sides will give you like a first and five. That's kind of halfway there. Anyway, every once in a while you'll see like a first and two. You're like,
That's true. The hold is a good example. I was just curious. I mean, I know you got a good grasp of the rule book, so I was curious. But yeah, you know, I think the big takeaway is that, you know, the Ravens are still the second best point differential in the league right now. Somehow still better than the Steelers, just behind the Chiefs. So this is still a good team. It's just one that is strikingly inconsistent. And if they cannot commit to fixing those inconsistencies, like these ridiculous illegal formation plays, like, guys, somebody tipped the league off that they think that the Ravens are cheating deep on those plays. Get back. Like, the league is now looking for them explicitly to be doing this. Get on the line of scrimmage. Get. Yeah.
Just line up the way you're supposed to. The extra like 12 inches or 6 inches that you're getting by not lining up properly is not worth it. Anyway, one last thing I wanted to say. I wanted to shout out Nick Boyle in this game. I think he had a really good game. I think he actually led the team in receiving yards. The ball was actually spread around pretty well in this game. There wasn't a lot of passing, but Boyle, I think, had like 4 for 39 or something. But he had some nice catches. He also had some really key blocks in this game. He had a great block on the touchdown run by Edwards. He and Ricard both just drove their guys off the line and gave Edwards a really easy lane into the end zone. And, he's kind of one of those guys who's pretty unheralded, kind of lunch pail guy who's just going to go in and do his job. He had some really nice plays in this one. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, he definitely did. And it seems like the Ravens, part of why he had a great game was the Ravens decided to stop using Ricard in some of those situations too. It seemed like Ricard on kind of like the 4, 5, 6 yard down the field routes disappeared, and the stretch kind of like flat outside routes really weren't there as much this game. And maybe that was by design on the defense. I think the Ravens should put that in their back pocket and keep it there all the way until the very last game of whatever this year is going to be, because it's not been effective this year. And I thought that We saw more of that 11 personnel. That meant that Boyle was sometimes going to be that guy, and it also meant lesser Ricard would be my hunch. So I'll be interested to see where the snap counts kind of come out, you know, once we see those this week too.
Yeah, so I think that'll wrap it up for us. Anybody on the defensive side that caught your eye?
Yeah, I thought Malik Harrison played a really solid game. I thought that, you know, the Ravens could really have used that. Fort seems to have been not playing as well recently, so I was glad to see him, you know, have a good game. But Ellis was my guy. I'd say that I thought that he was just in a couple big moments, had a couple really big plays. So we've got Monday Night Football coming up, Sunday Night Football next week. I think it's going to hopefully be a little bit of a dud. There shouldn't be any reason why the Ravens aren't in it, kind of in leading with the Patriots. And, you know, who knows? The Steelers almost blew it today against Dallas. So, you know, maybe they'll blow another one at some point here soon too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the Ravens putting together a good game after this one. And the Patriots, they still have a solid defense, but it's not the defense that they had last year. We saw the Ravens carve them up last year, and I don't think that the Patriots can move the ball on this Ravens defense. So I think that should be a pretty solid win for the Ravens.
Yeah, so we'll either be coming at you pretty late Eastern time on Sunday night, or wrapping up and try and get this out early on Monday next week. All right, everybody. Well, you guys can find us on Twitter. He's at Gabe Fergie. I'm at BSL Jordan Co. We'd love to hear from you and let us know what you're looking for to hear about in the next Situation Room.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk.
Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.